South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. In a recent show, I was talking about GMO foods, genetically modified foods, and what's been happening with the state of GMOs down here in Latin America. And I did mention if you happen to shop at any of the local food and produce markets, you don't have to worry a bit about being a guinea pig for Monsanto, you know? Down here, small and medium-sized farmers have not even heard of GMO yet. In fact, when you ask them about GMOs, they don't even know what the hell you're talking about. You've got to explain it to them, and that's when you get that deer-in-the-headlights look. Get used to it. Down here, us expats get that blank look out of the locals a lot. Believe me. The common folks just don't get why we do such stupid things like GMO, you know? Anyway, you've heard me talk about lag time before down here in Latin America. Well, when it comes to GMOs, thank God for lag time. We'll live longer for it, that's for sure. I mean, the average farmer down here has a very small operation, between 5 and 25 acres. The fact is, these guys don't even have tractors or any kind of motorized equipment at all. And 80% of these guys do not irrigate at all. Even if they wanted to, they couldn't afford the gear or the pumps or the gas to run the pumps. And what'll strike you funny when you go to one of these big produce markets is seeing these guys coming in from their farms really early in the morning before the market opens when they set their little produce stands up. That's when you see virtually hundreds of rickety old pickup trucks. 90% of them wouldn't be roadworthy up in the first world, but nobody's looking down here. These things are so overloaded and bottoming out on their springs, just loaded down with mangoes or pineapples or onions or tomatoes. And you just wonder how they make the trip day in and day out. But they do. And of course, it's not just food that they haul. They always have two or three kids on top hitching a ride into town. And in the first world, that would be a $200 fine, you know, hauling someone in the back of your pickup. But down here, it just might be illegal, but no one knows for sure and no one's paying attention anyway. Though I have to say, in three countries I know of for sure, Costa Rica, Chile, and Argentina, you'll get a $20 fine per person if you haul someone in the back of your pickup. All in an effort to be first world, of course, though those $20 fines usually go directly into the pockets of the cops. Kind of a Christmas bonus, if you know what I mean. Anyway, like I said, it's a real sight seeing these guys hauling their produce in the morning from the farm to the market. It's a scene right out of an old 1940s Warner Brothers movie back in the States. And you expect these guys to suddenly just switch over to GMOs? I don't think so. Not in my lifetime, anyway. The big guys, yes. The big corporate industrial farmers with case tractors and thousands of acres. Yeah, they'll do it. But those guys are the big exporters. They don't sell much at all in the interior of their country. It's the little guys that supply 80 to 90% of what's locally eaten by the likes of you and me. So that's real good news for us expats, for sure. But always with good news comes some bad news. Now, here's an amazing statistic. Up in the first world, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Research and Data Service, in the year 2011, last year, 96% of all corn crops in North America were genetically modified. That's both yellow and white corn. And the only corn that's not genetically modified, get this, popcorn. So go ahead and knock yourself out with the Jiffy Pop. On second thought, get an air popper and hit it with some extra virgin olive oil instead of butter. So that means virtually 100% of all the standard corn items that you eat are genetically modified. I mean, all of the corn you listeners up in the States are eating, not what us expats down here eat. And that includes nearly all of the animal feed, too. And dog food, etc. Anything that contains corn. Or anything derived from corn, like that slow-acting poison, high fructose corn syrup, which seems to be in every possible packaged food available these days. Just read the labels and you'll see. Anyway, that's news that should clog up your intestines without any help from the corn syrup. And this'll make you cringe too. 85% of all prepackaged food in grocery stores up in the States contains some kind of GMO product, too. And what does that mean? That means all you expat wannabes up there and everyone else, you really are guinea pigs for Monsanto. Unless, of course, you buy zero prepackaged foods in the grocery store and buy all organic, which isn't easy at all if you're on a budget. If you don't have your own garden to grow organics yourself, which, by the way, is almost impossible for any city dweller, then you're going to pay two or three times as much for any store-bought foods that are certified organic. That's just the price you have to pay when you live up north. So now you can add that to the long list of reasons why it's a very good idea to get your bags packed and move down here to Latin America, preferably in the Altiplano and off the tourist trail. So here's what you have to remember about that locally grown food sold at the produce markets down here. Even though it's as close to organic as you're going to get without being actually labeled certified organic, you're still going to pay a quarter to a fifth of what you'd pay for GMO produce up in the first world. You get what I'm saying now, don't you? But remember, if you go to one of the first world style food stores down here like Walmart or some of the other big chains, you'll be able to buy all that prepackaged junk that you get up in the first world too. So if you're down here, you can still get yourself a healthy dose of GMO foods and as much high fructose corn syrup as you want. All you have to do is buy prepackaged stuff like you do up in the States. So it's not as if GMO stuff hasn't hit down here, it has. But not in the big outdoor produce markets. Now, you know there's four or five Latin American countries that I don't recommend to move to as an expat. They're all right to visit, of course, but you really wouldn't want to live there. Generally, because they're either loaded with gringos and therefore first world expensive, or they're on the fast track to becoming first world in ways us expats just can't stomach. And Argentina is one of those countries I don't recommend, and not just because it's first world expensive. One thing you have to realize about Argentina, if you want the full effect of the gringo advantage, you're not going to get it there. And now that they've slapped strict monetary controls on the US dollar, in fact, they've slapped a big surcharge or tax anytime you change the Argentine peso to a foreign currency, like the dollar or the euro. Since they've started with that big brother crap, I can't really say too many good things about Argentina at all. And I know a lot of these big newsletter writers like Doug Casey and such are setting up big farming and real estate projects in Argentina. Well, all I've got to say is, good luck. I'd like to hear how rosy it is over there in about 2 or 3 years. Because, you know, unless they've bought off the politicians in that little development they've got in the boonies, which of course is always a possibility in Latin America, you know, based on what the government's doing there right now, they're likely to find it's not the free-spirited, inexpensive, utopian getaway they thought it was. But of course, Doug Casey and his friends all have real money, so maybe they've figured all that into the equation already. Who knows? All I know is it's way too expensive for my tastes. Now, as for Argentine residents, they don't like what's happening one bit either. In fact, lately I was talking to one of my buddies who lives in Argentina. He told me that astute Argentine businessmen and people in the middle to upper classes have figured out certain angles and ways not to pay that surcharge when switching their currency into foreign currency like dollars or euros. They've been skirting it because they found a certain loophole. It seems the government put an exemption on the currency conversion surcharge or tax if you were changing your money over to a first world currency and using it to travel outside of the country on a business or vacation. Because obviously, if you were traveling, let's say, to New York, you'd have to switch pesos to dollars before you ever got there, because when you land in New York, as soon as you get to the airport, you got to start using dollars. They won't take pesos. Not even for a coffee or a stick of bubblegum. So the Argentine government wisely exempted monies that you exchange for a first world currency when you're going to travel. But human nature being as it is, that universal hatred of paying taxes and using all means necessary to avoid forking your hard-earned money over to the government, what happened was, as soon as the Argentine government announced that currency exemption when used for travel, suddenly, within 2 weeks, there was a 500% increase in people going to the bank and to travel agencies and applying for the currency exchange tax exemption, everyone saying they were going to use that money to go away on a trip. And the Argentine government, being basically third world, had no way of checking up if the people who applied for the exemption actually went on a trip or not. And of course, the Argentine people knew there was basically no way they were going to get caught. And now the government has egg on its face. They've announced that they're going to investigate these cases. And they've proposed huge fines and prison terms for people who manipulate the system that way. Now I ask you, is this a country you want to live in? And you know, every time I hear anyone defend Argentina, usually first worlders who've never been there or have only been on vacation to Buenos Aires for a few weeks. With them, it's like a broken record. They're always impressed as to how European and educated Argentinos are, and how beautiful and old world Buenos Aires really is. And as you walk around Buenos Aires, you never think that the country's on the verge of another financial collapse. But then again, no one thought that would happen in Spain, Portugal, Ireland, or Greece either now, did they? Now, we know Argentina's a basket case financially. It always has been. Though when you're there, it's easy to be fooled by appearances. They put on a good show, you know? And lately, at least, they've been putting on a good show politically, too, rushing to be a first world-style Big Brother state. But here's a little fact I'm sure you didn't know. In 2001, which wasn't so long ago, really, when Argentina's banking system collapsed completely and half of all the liquid assets were drained out of the banks and fled into the safety of other currencies in other countries. That's when Argentina's version of Big Brother clamped down hard and heavy, in the form of currency controls, where if you had a US dollar account in a bank, they only allowed you to take 100 bucks a month out. Anyway, back in 2001, did you know that the political and financial system in Argentina was so unstable and precarious that they went through 5 presidents in 2 weeks? Let me repeat that. They had 5 different presidents of the country in 2 weeks. Unbelievable, but true. Go ahead and look it up. It's nothing to be proud of, but it's one way to get into the Guinness Book of Records now, isn't it? Now, if you are any kind of student of economics, you know that when a country's teetering financially and ready to collapse, or when it's on the verge of defaulting or devaluing its currency, one of the very first things that they do in a panic is to slap on currency controls. And that's in an effort to keep the liquid wealth from fleeing the country. Though a move like that always causes even more panic, not to mention much anxiety and nervousness in the business sector. And there's no better way in the world to keep foreign investors away than to slap on currency controls. But then again, that's exactly what Argentina's been doing in the last few months. And naturally, foreigners who may have thought of investing in Argentina are suspicious and wondering what's going on there now. How the latest currency controls are affecting the Argentine economy. Well, according to the government's own economic statistics, the indice of economic activity for the past June and July stood at exactly a 0% growth rate, with an accompanying negative outflow of capital and reserves. And worse yet, just this week, the International Financial Rating Agency, Standard & Poor's, just reduced Argentina's debt rating from a B to a B-. That's actually a junk bond rating. Did you know that? Now, for a country that thinks of itself as a first world island in a sea of third world chaos, that's a pretty pathetic rating. Especially since it's the same rating Pakistan has. And this'll shock you. Out of all 20 Latin American countries, the only country that's got a worse rating is, guess who? Cuba. In fact, Cuba doesn't have a Standard & Poor's rating because their currency isn't convertible and they don't float debt bonds because there's no international market for them. So, bottom line, statistically speaking, Argentina's on the road to another financial blowout. But so is the first world too, which puts them in good company. And here's some news about Argentina that I'm sure is going to surprise you. When I heard it, it shocked me too. Now, when you think of psychotherapy, you think of the first world automatically, don't you? You think of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung and that poster child for failed psychotherapy, Woody Allen, right? And when you think of psychotherapy, you think of big first world cities like New York, Chicago, and LA, where a good percentage of the population are on prescribed psychotropic drugs like Zoloft and Paxil, and kids with their Ritalin, Concerta, and Adderall. And as you might imagine, and I've mentioned before on my show, Latin America has so few psychologists and psychiatrists that even expats like me and my friends practically never run into anyone who's taking a medication like that. And though us expats get around, none of us seem to ever run into a psychiatrist or a psychologist either. Like expat Eddie says, any country where there's no Big Brother, lawyers don't advertise, and people don't go to shrinks, now that's an expat paradise. In fact, in my 21 years down here, I've only once run into a psychiatric professional myself. a psychologist. And guess what? She had so little work in her own field that I hired her for one of my Latin American seminars as an English translator. And she took the job because she was dying of boredom. And you know, I've never met a Latin kid on a psychotropic drug like Ritalin either. Even though up in the first world USA, and upwards of 20% of all grade school and high school kids are on some kind of medicine like that. God, what a screwed up world, huh? Anyway, after mentioning all this, and the amazing lack of psychiatrists and psychobabble down here, I have to sadly report that there is one country in Latin America that breaks all records when it comes to psychiatrists, psychiatric care, and psychotropic prescription drug numbers. You'll never guess which country has the most psychiatrists per capita in the whole world. Go ahead and ask this question at a party and make a bet on it. You'll win every time. In fact, this country has 15 psychotherapists per 1,000 persons, the highest percentage in the world. And that over-medicated, totally psychologically screwed up place is, ding ding, Argentina. Anyway, their official statistics show Argentina has world-class numbers of manic depressives, neurotics, psychotics, and vast numbers of people with all the other cataloged mental conditions you can find in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. That's the DSM for short. And why wouldn't Argentina be all psychologically screwed up? Since every business, school, and government agency has at least one shrink on staff, they've got to find and catalog mental disorders or they wouldn't have a job, right? And how Argentina ended up with the world's greatest concentration of psychiatrists and psychotherapists, nobody seems to know. But my friend from Argentina tells me, he says he thinks it's because Argentine people are way overeducated in the liberal arts and vastly undereducated in the hard sciences. And the country's population has talked itself into the idea that it's really a first world island stuck smack dab in the middle of the third world. And they don't like those third world stereotypes. And cultured Argentinos suffer for that and the lack of international respect they get for being third world. Like my Argentine friend says, it's all very complicated. So going to shrinks is a national pastime. Like my friend says, in the face of Europe, they have a huge inferiority complex, but in the face of other Latinos from other Latin countries, they have a chip on their shoulder, a huge superiority complex. They absolutely believe they're much more superior to any other country in Latin America. Expat Eddie's got it right when he says it's kind of like how New Yorkers feel about the rest of the states. Everyone else is just a hayseed from Nebraska. But in the case of New Yorkers, they're right. And if you remember in my past show, I talked about those worldwide happiness polls where Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Honduras, very poor Latin countries, show up in the top 10 consistently. But that's not true for Argentina. They're almost always in the cellar. And there's something about those happiness polls. It seems like a country's ranking is inversely proportional to the amount of psychiatric professionals they have per capita. The more psychiatrists, the less happiness. So what came first, the chicken or the egg? Are there more psychiatrists when there's more unhappiness? Or are people unhappier when there's more psychiatrists? You tell me. So is Argentina really a good place to move to? Well, go ahead, be my guest. Well, Argentina's quite a place, all right, but it's like the old saying, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And speaking of psychiatric treatment and clinical psychology, it seems like the latest and the greatest fad and craze in Latin America in that respect is the advent of the bully. Yes, the bully. Until about 2 or 3 years ago, there was no such thing as a word bully in Spanish. In fact, there is no Spanish word for it. They use the English word, bully, or bullying. So as usual, it did take a couple of years of lag time before that bullying issue got on the radar down here, too. And you might ask, what kind of progress are parents' groups making with it down here? Well, just like up in the first world, practically none. Fact is, bullies have existed since the beginning of time, and if you're a scrawny little kid, you're going to get picked on. That's life, and no amount of PTA meetings and parental blathering are going to stop that. And if you don't like your kid being a victim, send him to karate class or get him a stun gun. Now, on the subject of clinical psychology, you know that in every school up in the United States, they have a psychologist or a counselor with a psychology degree on staff. In my day, they called them guidance counselors, and even us kids knew how useless they were. Back in my day, if you weren't a troublemaker like me, you only saw that guidance counselor about once or twice a year, and he never even knew your name. And it was a job they never really could get fired from, no matter how bad the counseling advice was that they gave their students. I mean, I got nothing but bad advice from mine. I remember he told me that I shouldn't go into the engineering field because it was going to be saturated with laid-off aerospace engineers. And when I got my bachelor's degree in engineering, us engineer graduates were the only kids in demand. So much for school counselors, huh? Anyway, down here in Latin America, as you might imagine, in the public grade schools and high schools, they don't have school psychologists or even guidance counselors. I mean, most of the public schools don't even have sinks with running water or toilets that flush, or even enough desks for the students. Now, most of the private schools down here, of course, have psychologists and guidance counselors on staff. It's the first world thing to do, you know. So, apart from having your kid in private school, what happens if you or your kid happens to need a clinical psychologist? I mean, they're not completely useless. There are certainly cases when you might need one. For example, with domestic problems like alcoholism, spousal abuse, and incest. Well, anyway, I picked up one of the big Salvador newspapers the other day, and I checked out the professional section in the classified ads, where professionals like doctors and accountants advertise their services. And I noticed there were a few ads for clinical psychology services, too. And here's a typical one. It says, we offer private, individual, one-on-one therapy, conferences, and group sessions. Our staff is university-trained, 100% board-certified. Make an appointment today for a free consultation. And here's the part I like. Fees, $10 a session. You heard me, $10 each. Now, I don't know if appointments down here are half an hour or an hour. It doesn't really matter. All I know that up in the States, a session's about an hour and it costs anywhere from $75 to $250, depending if you're in the big city or out in the boonies. So again, I just brought this psychiatric business up to point out how that lag time effect penetrates every aspect of Latin America. I would say that down here, clinical psychology and psychiatric sessions are on par with what it was like back in the 1960s or 70s back in the States. However, I doubt even back in the day of old Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung that a psychiatrist in any country in the world ever charged $10 a session. Only Lucy from Charlie Brown's Christmas was ever cheaper. And to change the subject a little bit, the other day I was in Salvador with Eddie at one of his restaurants, and we were sitting around the table with Eddie's cousin who came down to Salvador from the States for the very first time. And let me tell you, his 28-year-old cousin Lester, Eddie says, is beginning to be a big nuisance. He thinks Eddie's going to give him some golden tips on how to become a big success down here like Eddie did. And you know what it looks like to me, and I think Eddie's getting the picture. Lester has hooked his wagon to Eddie's, and Eddie doesn't like it. And I got the feeling that there was going to be some trouble coming down the line. Remember what old Benjamin Franklin said? He said fish and house guests start to smell after 3 days. Ain't that the truth? And when I first ran into Eddie and Lester, Les had already been staying at Eddie's house about 3 weeks. And Eddie's a real laid-back guy, but I could tell it was starting to get to him because he was trying to pawn Les off on me. But I was having none of that. In fact, that's one of the unspoken problems that expats have when word filters back, especially to the younger male members of your family back in the States. When they find out that you're living the life of Riley, and of course, they're not. They're up in the first world on that treadmill. Or worse, unemployed. So they decide to come down and look you up. And it could be like less for an indefinite period of time. Now it seems every expat I know has had that happen to him at least once. There's nothing worse than becoming a short notice tour guide for a wayward distant relative that shows up at your front porch one day. That's another reason so many expats I know keep a very low profile. Not just to keep under the radar of nosy big brother. But it doesn't always work that way, you know? At least Lester gave me an interesting take on the youth of Latin America. He said he really felt nostalgic as he drove through the middle and lower middle class parts of San Salvador. He said it reminded him of back when he was a kid, like 7, 8, 9 years old, before the internet and smartphones and all that, when kids would come home from school and immediately go outside and play football or soccer or wrestle or play catch, race each other and play outdoor games and, well, they just had to get out of the house, you know? And sure, he said the neighborhoods are third world and all that, dingy and kind of scruffy around the edges, but the kids don't seem to mind a bit. They're having fun and getting exercise like we used to do when we were 7 or 8 years old. We used to live outside. We hated coming in. Remember that? We didn't even want to come home for supper. We'd hear our mother calling from 6 blocks away and then, uh-oh, you'd had to go. And here's another thing Lester said. Look around you. Look at the kids playing. Did you notice that they're all skinny? None of them are fat or obese like a third of the kids are in the States. Then, of course, I had to butt in and tell them that, well, Latins, once they hit 20 or 25, they start getting fat around the middle, too. Because as soon as they get a job and start making money, they go for the junk food in McDonald's, just like first world kids. But like Lester said, the difference is young kids down here get real exercise. So they really don't pork out extremely young like American kids do. And while I was visiting Eddie and Lester, we went to go see a movie at the IMAX. That movie, Total Recall, the remake of that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Colin Farrell. I'm sure a lot of you have seen that movie. And by the way, we paid $3.50 for a matinee. In English with Spanish subtitles, of course. Anyway, I noticed something very strange when I was watching that movie, and I want to lay it on you guys right now. I guess maybe a half an hour or 20 minutes into the movie, the Colin Farrell character, you know, the hero, he's not sure who he is, but he has a clue to go to a safety deposit box in a bank, where in the box he could find out his true identity. This takes place about 50 years in the future. In a distorted, horrible world completely controlled by Big Brother, where everyone's chipped and tagged, recorded and monitored 24/7 wherever they go. Anyway, here's the real strange thing. He opens up that safety deposit box where he sees a passport and some ID documents, and to the left, there's a stack of brand new $50 bills, not with the smiling face of Ulysses S. Grant, no, but with the smiling face of Obama. Now, that got me thinking. Did the filmmakers do that to slam Obama? Since in the movie they're showing you a very dismal and depressing future, where there's no privacy, no human rights, and everyone's a pawn of the state. Like socialism on steroids, you know? I mean, when you consider only the most iconic presidents and statesmen, like Franklin, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Grant had their faces on U.S. paper bills, in the future, according to this movie, Obama is some kind of an icon like Lincoln or Franklin, obviously. But what are the filmmakers really trying to say? Are they trying to brown-nose Obama by immortalizing him on a $50 bill? Or are they really slamming him by showing how the U.S. way of life has self-destructed under the corrupt guidance of presidents like him? So the filmmakers were either kissing up to him or slapping him in the face. But knowing how ultra-liberal Hollywood usually is, I kind of think it was a move to kiss his ass, you know? You be the judge. Have a look at the movie and pay attention. They only show that scene for about 3 seconds, but it's a close-up. A very disturbing close-up.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. Coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.